It's all connected with Grimnir and Circle. They connect all the dots. The subject doesn't matter. The connections are real and tangible. Also, we have Free Your Mind with Grimnir and Moose Girl. You can break from thought constraints on the scope of your vision only by realizing those limits that have been presented to you do not apply to you. They are not real. Those concepts make people feel comfortable by giving them thought boundaries. This is the Free Your Mind show with Moose Girl and Grimnir. Sit back and listen and see your way beyond the world as it has been defined. We have A Pondergander with Vinny to think and reason, raising expectations through thought-provoking episodes. If you cannot do great things, do small things in a great way. On Sundays, you can sit back and relax and enjoy some music from Grimnir. He broadcasts the Sunday Blues Show live on Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. He plays all kinds of blues, from great oldies like Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, and John Lee Hooker, to the most modern hard-rocking blues from Joe Bonamassa, Poppy Chubby, and Samantha Fish, and all the stuff between, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jack Bach Project, and Gary Moore. He also plays blues music from classic rock bands, the Rolling Stones, ZZ Top, and Cream. And while he's playing the music, we are in the Real Liberty Media chat on irc.freenode.net playing a rousing game of trivia. So come on over and join us every Sunday for some great tunes, fun trivia, and great chat. We also have a show, The Top 10 Countdown. Gary L. and Gigi's Boo play the top 10 songs from years gone by, and they provide some interesting historical facts and trivia about the songs and the era. These are all great shows with great content and inspiring messages. Come spend some time with us. Get to know us, and we will get to know you. Also, if you love what you hear and want to represent, we have Real Liberty Media gear. You will love the artwork, and it will inspire conversation. Check out our Amazon.com store and Real Liberty Media goods from our website, reallibertymedia.com. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist, here on Real Liberty Media. Nice to see you guys in chat. And I just wanted to mention kind of early on here in the show, I'm going to start putting some short posts up on Rumble and represent Real Liberty Media there. Can't believe it. This is the 12th episode, and time flies when you're having fun, I guess. I'm going to be kind of checking for any feedback on my microphone because I've had some, some issues with my mic being hot sometimes. And, you know, I am truly an amateur at this stuff, so don't always know how to adjust it quickly and easily. But I made a couple changes. We'll see how it goes. So I did want to kind of tell you guys, this is kind of funny. This is my Saturday prep. So Saturday mornings, when I wake up, kind of one of the first things I do, Saturday's kind of all about preparing for Real Liberty Media and the Redneck Dentist show. But, you know, I still got to get stuff done around the homestead here. So, but this is kind of how I start my day. I start my day with a deliciously brewed fresh cup of coffee. I have a coffee maker that grinds the beans and then drips a fresh pot of coffee. And I'm telling you, every night I go to bed, I tell my wife, I'm just a few minutes away from that delicious cup of coffee because it is just so good. But my point is, I purchased the large Real Liberty Media cup. And so I start Saturdays drinking out of that cup. It's kind of like I have a different coffee cup for each day of the week. Kind of. I don't have that many coffee cups, but A different cup for different days. On Saturdays, it's the Real Liberty Media Cup. It's awesome. You can go to our website and check out the gear and get yourself one. I love the artwork on it. And I put my Real Liberty Media t-shirt on. And so today, I got ready to start my day. And of course, I have some morning stuff I have to do. And then we're tilling up some more of the garden. And I have to run to town to get, like, weekly we go to town and pick up stuff that you just need for the week, milk, kefir, just the stuff that, you can only store for a week or so. Anyway, and I was picking up some dirt because I needed a certain kind of organic dirt for my potato patch, which is actually just a giant tractor tire that I start my potatoes in. And I probably talked about this, but it doesn't matter. I'll talk about it later. But so I had my Real Liberty Media shirt on while I was in town. And when I was ordering up I got 2 yards of dirt. After I kind of got done with the transaction at customer service there, and before they loaded the truck, the lady says, "Hey, what's Real Liberty Media?" And then I realized, oh, I got my shirt on, And I said, and I explained it to her, and I said, "I do a podcast today at 2:00. And she goes, "Well, I really like the sound of that." She says, "I'll have to check it out." So it's kind of fun to have some gear to represent and share Real Liberty Media with people. And hopefully they come and check it out. It's another reason I'm going to do a little something on Rumble, is just to see if we can, if we can draw more attention to what I think is just a great site with some great shows on it. I really love listening to the shows. Unfortunately, I almost never get to hear them live. I usually listen to them kind of at the end of the day before I do my evening stuff or while I'm doing it. But when I'm at work, it's just so difficult because we play music in the clinic mostly. And that's on the overhead sound system. And then, at my desk, I can listen to whatever I want. But then, I go and see patients and I come back to my desk and so much stuff is already over with or I've missed so much. So I like to listen to it. And I mean, that's a great point about Real Liberty Media also, is you don't have to catch the shows live. You can go and listen to the podcast. You could, I'm not 100% sure you can download the shows, but you can listen to them there on the site. And that's what I do. I try and pick up everybody's show at some point during the week. And it's all good, all very entertaining. Now, on the weekends, it's pretty nice because I get to catch the shows live, which is pretty cool. So always busy. Oh, and so I got some feedback that, yeah, we can download the shows. So that's fantastic. All right, the next thing on the agenda, I wanted to kind of do a little update here. As you know, a few weeks ago, we had to put one of our dogs to sleep. And that was my wife's little buddy. You know how dogs kind of tend to pick somebody that, and she actually had that dog before we got married. So that, it was her dog. So she has picked out a new dog, and we will be getting him on June 5th. So he was born like March 25th, I think. And his name is Dexter. And it's kind of funny, because this is a purebred breeder. So they name their animals, how that goes. Have to have a name on the paper or something. I don't know how it goes really, but they name them all. And, of course, you can always rename them. That's no big deal. And this isn't going to make sense to probably anybody in the chat room or anybody listening. But in dentistry, there's a tool called Dexter. And I shouldn't really call it a tool. It's kind of a practice dummy. And so it's a mannequin sort of with kind of rubbery cheeks and lips. Kind of the whole head structure is kind of rubbery. And then it has teeth kind of mounted on a little arch that you can take out of the dummy and put new teeth in. And that's how you learn to do dentistry. You start off on dummies. So after a couple of days, when we finally decided to get this dog, I said, by the way, I said, Dexter is actually a pretty good name. And then when I explained to my wife, because she also was in dentistry, we both had a pretty dang good laugh about it because it just fits so perfectly. We were both in dentistry and we both used Dexter's. She was a dental assistant and a dental lab tech in the Navy. So, you know, she has a dental background also. So like it doesn't, I see some comments about a serial killer named Dexter. I'll have to look that one up. But anyway, I thought I'd give an update on that, on the puppy search. And there will be an image. Well, there will be a link to an image of Dexter in the show notes. So if you want to see Dexter, he's still pretty young. What is he? 7 weeks, something like that. Anyway, there'll be an image for you to check out. And today on the Redneck Dentist menu, we are having barbecue country ribs. Oh my gosh, they are going to be fantastic. So this is the way I kind of like to do country ribs. We just smoke them for like an hour or two. And then I cook them for about, well, today really it didn't take that long. About 35 minutes. And then we've kind of cooked off some of the fat and we've smoked them. Then we put them in the, come on over, Grimner, be a kind of a long drive, but you're always welcome here, man. Then we put them in the crock pot with some, you know, a barbecue sauce on them and let them kind of slow cook with that barbecue sauce. And yeah, holy cow, I had a little, you know, you got to test it as it's coming off the grill. And oh my God, it was so good. So I can't wait to see what that's like a little later on today. And the other new thing, man, I picked up a new hobby. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this before. I bought a truck about a month ago, and maybe I explained this and maybe I didn't. I don't know if it's really worth going into. Anyway, I bought a Ford F-250, Power Stroke, you know, diesel. It's a real nice truck and everything, but in some ways, I didn't really buy it for me. Or at least what I should say is I wasn't planning on buying another truck, and I didn't buy a new one. I bought a 2016. It only had 30,000 miles on it, which I thought was a little bit unusual, but I got a really good deal on it, so I really can't complain about anything. And it's a really beautiful truck. It's in great shape and all that stuff. But I started a new hobby because my stepson, he got into this, and he kept telling me how fun it was. And so I decided, he kept kind of talking about, you know, if I would get one of these, we could go hang out together. So the new hobby is radio-controlled rock crawling. And I'm telling you, it is so much fun. Yesterday, he and I went out for the first time together. Now, I mean, I have a lot of areas on the property here that you can actually do some rock crawling on with these RC cars. And they're like 1/10 scale, so that's not a small rig. I mean, it is small, yeah, but, you know, 1/10 scale is starting to get pretty good size. And you can customize the heck out of them. You can change, you know, you can change gear ratios. You can change motors, tires, suspension, it's everything. I mean, it's kind of like a miniature actual vehicle. So anyway, he and I went to a place called Lebanon Dam, which is here in Oregon, And right below the dam, there's this rocky formation that's a little bit like a moonscape, has a little bit of river rock, but really not that much. It's much more kind of jagged rock area. Anyway, we were out there for, we were actually rock crawling with our radio control cars. I guess they're both Gladiator Jeep versions. So we were out there for 3 hours, and I'm telling you, it didn't seem like 3 hours at all. Time went by so fast, and this field was so big. I'll bet it was probably 100 yards. I'll bet it's at least 100 yards long and maybe 30 or 40 yards wide. And of course, it's all variable because it's all wild. And it's just a blast. I mean, it is just a blast. I have really enjoyed that. Let's see, I got my rock crawler about 2 weeks ago. And I spend a lot of time here on the property just, you know. So we have this fountain. I don't know if I've ever put a picture up on the website or anything, but I'll take some video and put it up on, I'll put it on Rumble, as a matter of fact, because I'm avoiding all of the censored social media things as much as I can. But anyway, that's been a blast, and I would recommend it for anybody, and I'll tell you why. There's a few good reasons and one not so good reason. But one, it's great for relaxing, definitely, and distracting you from whatever else might be going on in your life, because you're just kind of into, you know, rock crawling isn't high speed or anything. It's very slow. That's why they call it crawling, I'm sure. But, you know, you're really kind of focused on what you're doing with this little vehicle. And it keeps you really distracted, kind of gets your mind off of things and lets you relax. And you're outdoors, or, I mean, I guess you could do it indoors, but being outdoors is great. I soaked up 3 hours of sunshine, and the weather was just awesome yesterday. It was like 80 degrees. There was a little bit of a breeze and sunny, clear skies. It was gorgeous. It does kind of lighten your wallet a little bit, but you can get all different kinds, and you can get, you know, some inexpensive entry level rigs, or you can get more expensive rigs. You can spend however much money you want to do on it. And basically, you know, anybody can do it. So it's pretty awesome that it's a pretty awesome, hobby, I think. Anyway, so I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that stuff on and off. I did want to do a little update on that medical emergency I was talking about last week, because I did finally get an update. Anyway, that patient that I talked about on the last episode of Redneck Dentist was, he actually did suffer a stroke, and a pretty significant one, as a matter of fact. There's a structure in your brain called the Circle of Willis, I think. I should have looked this up before I actually said it. But I'm pretty sure it's called the Circle of Willis. And it's the blood supply for your brain. And it actually is kind of a circle. And the reason is because it's efficient to get blood to the brain. And in case something gets blocked, blood can still flow a different pattern and get to your brain. But he has like half, so one side of his brain, the entire half of that Circle of Willis has narrowed. So he had a pretty significant medical emergency right there in our dental clinic. And that's kind of why I was talking about it last week. He is alive, and I guess he's doing okay. The poor guy, I really, like, my personal opinion is he's pretty tired of being alive, but maybe he's just stuck where he is. So he's kind of miserable anyway. But anyway, I hope the best for him, whatever that may be. Okay, Next on the agenda, we are going to talk about a little bit of prep. Remember last week I said I was going to have a segment each week on prepping, like just getting ready for whatever. And that whatever, sometimes we don't always think about all the possible things that could happen, but I have a short list here, and then I have a great example that really literally just crossed the news wires, I guess, today. And it was kind of fortunate because I was like, this is perfect for talking about why you should, you know, prepare for stuff, prepare for disasters, prepare for whatever might be coming. And let's just go through a few things. Like I have on my list natural disasters like earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, snow, heat waves, tsunamis, all of those things. You know, you could be in a really bad place if you aren't prepared in some way to deal with each one of those kind of natural disasters. Of course, in the last year, we've seen what a pandemic, whether it's real or imagined. Still, you know, look at the things, adjustments we've had to, be prepared for any bad moon on the rise. That is right, Grimner. But the pandemic in the last year, you know, doesn't matter whether that virus is deadly or as deadly as they would like you to believe or not. The fact is, you know, there's been a lot of restrictions to our ability to continue to live our lives, at least in somewhat of a normal fashion. And anyway, so that's a good example in our own lives, you know, what we've experienced in the past year with pandemic. Climate change is another thing. And the example I have today is a perfect example of climate change. Now, I, for one, I am a scientist. I'm a dentist. I mean, my undergrad degree is in biology. And I can tell you, I'm just not a believer in man-made climate change. Yeah, the climate changes. How much emphasis, I mean, how much influence do we have on that? I'm not really sure. I'm not convinced that we affect the climate as much as everybody would like us to believe we affect the climate. So some people are going to be, some people are going to be offended by that, but that's just my take on it. And I have some examples in my own life that I'll share at some point, and I probably have shared, but I'm just saying, climate's going to change. No matter what we do, it's going to change. And I think our ability to affect it is pretty minimal. Also, we have astronomical events. We can have a coronal mass ejection that interferes with pretty much all electronics. You could have meteors, could have terrorism, you know, whether it's local or national, whether it's regional or whatever. You could have terrorist attacks. We're looking at economic upheaval coming at us, you know, people who aren't going to be able to afford food, which may be most of us, or oil. I mean, look what happened in the last week with the pipeline being shut down and how many places ran out of gas. And look, I mean, there were some physical altercations when people were waiting to get gas, and people get desperate. And that can lead to social unrest, another, you know, possible cause for us to have to prep for crisis. And of course, there's always wars, rumors of war, nuclear threats, and then ransomware attacks like I was just talking about with the pipeline this week. And, you know, I was, just kind of a side comment about that. I noticed like there was some talk about whether the government should have done anything about this cyber attack, you know, and if the government should have stepped in. And I have a few comments to make about that. One thing is, you notice, I don't know if you ever really looked at this. If you go to the gas pump and look at the price, and usually, I know in Oregon, it's like a law that they have to put on the pump, you know, where you know, how much of that fee that you're paying for gas goes to gas and how much goes to federal, state, and local taxes. But if you look at that sticker, you see that the federal government collects a huge amount of money on gas. What do they do to get that gas to the pump? Not one damn thing. They put zero effort into getting gas to the pump, but they take money from the sale of gas or diesel or whatever. So it's kind of interesting that people were saying the federal government should have stepped in, like almost like it's a national resource, and it's not. You know, it's a private resource, and it was a private company that did it. So on one hand, I think to myself, look, you know, there's ransom attacks out there. You got to be prepared for that. If you're a business, you know, if you're a business owner and you have IT, you've got to secure it, and you got to secure it with more than some, you know, you have to have people that are qualified to help defend you against ransomware attacks. And believe me, I know how difficult that is, because as soon as you hire just regular people and turn them loose on your terminals, your computer system, man, you never know who's going to open up that one email. I can tell you 15 years ago, I think it was a little more than that, one of the front office people who worked in the office I was working in way back then, she actually answered one of those emails that, do you remember those emails? I don't know if they're still around. So a guy from who knows where, Uganda, Ethiopia, it doesn't matter, somewhere, would send you an email and say that, you know, he's got, you know, tens of thousands of dollars waiting for you. But, you know, in order for you to get it, you have to give him your bank account number and all this stuff. This one front desk person literally thought she was going to get that money. And she had given this guy all of that information. And guess what? I mean, he took whatever she had, and she didn't have anything, really. But he took whatever it was. Yeah, Nigerians. That's right. It was Nigerian. That is exactly right. Anyway, so she fell for it. And I mean, hell, today, if you have that same kind of person working at your front desk and they don't recognize an email, like I see them all the time in my office. I get emails from people saying, and I don't mean in my personal email, I mean in my work email. I always get stuff, you know, from product companies or representatives who, I mean, I get legitimate emails from those people, you know, asking if they can demo something or asking if I would like to try their product versus the one I'm using, and then telling me the benefits why. And then I get the fake emails that are similar. They look similar. But I mean, if you just look at, you know, who it's from, although sometimes they can fool you with that. I've never been fooled because, number one, I'm not that interested in email. I'm not that interested in new products for the most part. And if there's something new, I'll figure it out eventually that it will benefit me or my patients. So, but if you have an employee who doesn't recognize the potential for that email or any of those emails to cause problems, man, as soon as one of those hackers gets into your system, you're in trouble. You know, luckily, if you're at home mostly, you can isolate your system well enough. And I know a lot of the people in our chat room use Linux, which is an excellent operating system, to protect yourselves. But, you know, if you have employees that aren't really being careful, they can expose you to, you know, yeah, they can compromise your system without even knowing it. And I'm not going to mention where I work. It'd be pretty easy to find out, but we have like the worst IT department ever. I'm not kidding. I've literally thought several times about offering to go work in the IT department instead of being a dentist. But fortunately, I have too much. I'm still having too much fun being a dentist, and I still think I have a lot to offer people. But holy crap, man. Like, I've taken a few Linux admin courses, even Windows admin courses. I used to do a lot of programming in Visual Basic. A group of guys and I, we would work on different programs for different businesses. I mean, this was way back when, you know, Visual Studio kind of came out and you could program pretty easily. I mean, I've always kind of delved in programming languages, so, yeah, no kidding. I know, Grimner. That's one problem too. But anyway, yeah, we have the worst IT department ever. But I mean, fortunately, we've been pretty safe so far. So, pretty lucky. Anyway, hey, I want to get to this example of why you should be ready to prepare for a crisis. This is the craziest thing that this came across my desk today, and I don't know. Well, it did kind of come across my desk. I'll tell you why. Because my wife came in and said, "Hey, did you see this story?" And she laid it on my desk in front of me. So honestly, it did come across my desk. That sounded so professional though, didn't it? I'm going to read a little bit of this though, because I don't want to miss anything. Okay. It says, the water crisis along the California-Oregon border went from dire to catastrophic this week as federal regulators shut off irrigation water to farmers from a critical reservoir, and said they would not send extra water to dying salmon downstream or to a half dozen wildlife refuges that harbor millions of migrating birds each year. And what is shaping up to be the worst... Oh, by the way, there'll be a link to this article in the show notes also. In what is shaping up to be the worst water crisis in generations, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation said it will not release water this season into the main canal that feeds the bulk of the massive Klamath Reclamation Project, marking a first for the 114-year-old irrigating system. This year's drought conditions are bringing unprecedented hardship to the communities of the Klamath Basin, said Reclamation Deputy Commissioner Camille Kalimlim Tuton, calling the decision one of historic consequence. Reclamation is dedicated to working with our water users, tribes and partners to get through this difficult year and developing long-term solutions for the basin. I don't know what the long-term solutions will be. We're out of water. That's a problem. Going to make it rain up in here. Well, I hope so. The canal, a major component of the federally operated Klamath Reclamation Project, funnels Klamath River water from the Upper Klamath Lake, just north of the Oregon-California border, to more than 130,000 acres where generations of ranchers and farmers have grown hay, alfalfa, potatoes, and grazed cattle. So just think about that for a minute. So all of those crops, and I mean, I don't know how many of you have been to Northern California or California in general. I mean, there's a lot of produce going on in California. You know, a lot of vegetables being grown down there, a lot of big cattle farms or what do they call that? Concentrated, I don't know, CAFA. What does CAFA stand for? Concentrated Animal Farming something. I don't know. But anyway, there's some pretty dang, there's a lot of food that comes out of this area of California. So there's one problem is, there's not enough water to irrigate these lands, to grow these crops, and there's not enough water to send down the river to save the salmon. So it says only one irrigation district within the 200,000 acre project will receive any water from the Klamath River system this growing season, and it will have a severely limited supply, the Klamath Water Users Association said in a statement. Some other farmers rely on water from a different river, and they will also have a limited supply. This just couldn't be worse, said Klamath Irrigation District President Ty Clywer. The impacts to our family farms in these rural communities will be off the scale. At the same time, the agency said it would not release any so-called flushing flows from the same dam on the upper Klamath Lake to bolster water levels downstream in the lower Klamath River. The river is key to the survival of coho salmon, which are listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. In better water years, the pulses of water helped keep the river cool in turbulent conditions that help this fragile species. The fish are central to the diet and culture of the Yurok tribe, California's largest federally recognized tribe. The tribe said this week that low flows from drought and from previous mismanagement of the river by federal agency was causing a die-off of juvenile salmon from a bacterial disease that flourishes when water levels are low. You see the chain reaction effect here? Yurok fish biologists who have been testing the baby salmon in the lower Klamath River are finding that 70% of the fish are already dead in the traps used to collect them, and 97% are infected by the bacteria known as C. shasta. Right now, the Klamath River is full of dead and dying fish on the Yurok Reservation, said Frankie Myers, vice chairman of the Yurok tribe. This disease will kill most of the baby salmon in the Klamath, which will impact fish runs for many years to come. For salmon people, a juvenile fish kill is an absolute worst case scenario. And, you know, just think, so not only is it affecting these salmon, but it's affecting everything that feeds on these salmon. You know, even though they're a protected species, that doesn't mean that predators don't eat them. You know, probably sea lions, seals, osprey, eagles, probably some other fish when the fish are small. Who knows what else eats these salmon, but I mean, it's a chain reaction. It's going to affect a lot of things. Right now the Klamath River, I already read that. So my point was that here nearby me here in northwestern Oregon, you know, this disaster is coming to fruition. And all of the people that are going to be directly impacted, they have to figure out how they're going to survive now. And, you know, I think survival, some people, when they hear you talk about surviving or preparing for survival, it's like, well, how are you going to keep from dying? And yeah, that's probably part of it. I mean, that's probably the literal definition of it. But really, a plan to prepare for crisis is just a way to minimize the impact of those crises on your life. So if you have a plan, like any plan is better than no plan. And I like to ask people if they have a plan, well, can you actually practice that plan now? I mean, is it possible for you to practice that plan now? I mean, if you have an alternative way to get water, have you actually tried to go see if that's going to work? If you have what you think is a plan to harvest meat, can you practice that legally, or do you, you know, because I, you know, when it comes down to surviving, it's not like we're all going to be obeying the laws. I'm 100% sure about that. Drink time. Oh. So, in the weeks to come, I'm going to talk about different ways that I've practiced getting food. And I know I've mentioned before sprouting seeds. I think growing sprouts is, I always get stuck on it when I start to think about it. Growing sprouts is a great way to have a little bit of nutrition easily. So if you've never done it, it'd be a good time to gather up the equipment and get it done. And I think I put a link in the maybe one of the very first episodes of Redneck Dentist of where you can get that stuff, and you can get some really good organic seed. Anyway, didn't want to get off on that, but that's a good way to do it. You know, something else is if you have even a small, even find small areas of, you know, around where you live and see if you could grow some kind of food in one little corner. It doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, anything is going to help. So the three main things is, of course, water first, or shelter. I think water is more important than shelter. I would say water, food, and shelter. So have a plan to be able to acquire those three things. That's the first part of your plan, is how to make sure you're going to have fresh water or a way to filter water. Figure out how and where you're going to collect food from, and you know, where you're going to take shelter. If you have a place, that's awesome. If your place is destroyed, where are you going to go next? If the area you're living in is unlivable, where are you going to go next? And figure out, you know, what you have to do to put those plans into action, and if they're really going to work. And yeah, be interesting to see in the future episodes on Redneck Dentist, how that's gonna, different things I'll have to offer. And like I've said before, I'm not an expert at all. I'm just gonna share the kind of the stuff that I do and stuff that I am gonna do. For example, picking up the dirt today for my tractor tire potato patch is just another one of those steps. Because that's how I've been doing potatoes for years now, and it seems to work. So I know next fall and winter, I'm going to have potatoes. That's just one small part of the plan. But, you know, you have to, like, I really didn't want to go get dirt this morning because I played all day yesterday, and I wanted to prepare for, you know, make sure my notes were done for the show today. But guess what? You know, you got to take care of surviving first. You got to take care of, you know, putting food on the table first. So, besides, I got to drive the truck, and so that was fun. I'll just tell you guys briefly again. So this is the reason I got the truck. My son-in-law is a contractor, and he and our daughter and our kids went to Northern California, and he has a F-250, but it's gas-powered, which I don't think matters. But anyway, on the way back, they blew an engine on his truck. And so when they got back, you know, they got the truck back, and they're taking it in to see what was wrong. And sure enough, it's something horrible, you know, some catastrophic disaster happened in that engine, and you know, there's significant damage. Like, there's no repairing that engine. He needs a new engine. Well, that's going to take a while. Luckily, he had honest car warranty policy, and they're going to pay for it. But you know, it's going to take like 2 months before his rig is back working. And, you know, it just happened to be really crappy timing, because like right now you can't, like, there's not a lot of brand new trucks on the lots, and you can't really rent a truck to continue your contracting business in. So I was like, I had a little Ford Ranger. I just used it to go to work and back, you know, like it wasn't a big deal. So I just told him, my son-in-law, I go, listen, I'm going to go buy I'm going to go buy a big truck, and you can use it until yours is fixed. So that's what I did, and his truck is still in the shop, and so he uses my truck during the week, and he can continue making money as a contractor and putting, you know, getting their family, making sure that they have all their needs met and preparing for whatever is coming, and I have a nice truck to use for doing different stuff, like picking up dirt for the tractor potato patch. All right, so that's why I have a used truck, new to me truck. All right, and another story that just came, I picked up on the news just a few hours ago. This story, I think, has some really interesting information in it, and I will read a little bit on just a few things from the article. And there will be a link in the show notes, of course, and then I'm going to make some comments along the way. So this is an Ohio State University professor was sentenced for using grant money illegally, basically. So his name is Zhang Songguo, a former professor at Ohio State University, pleaded guilty in November to lying on his National Institutes of Health grant applications. How about that? The NIH. What else has the NIH done lately? I don't know. Sounds familiar for some reason. Anyway, he pleaded guilty to lying on his NIH grant applications in order to use $4.1 million in research grants to develop the fields of rheumatology and immunology for China. He was arrested in late May in Anchorage, Alaska, as he was preparing to board a charter flight to China in an attempt to flee the United States. When taken into custody, he was carrying multiple items, including two laptops, three cell phones, several USB drives, several bars of silver, expired Chinese passports for his family, and deeds for property in China. The judge also ordered Zhang to pay more than $3.4 million in restitution to the NIH, like they're never going to see that, and about $413,000 to OSU, Ohio State University. Oh, yeah. So, and this comment I thought was really interesting. Whoever is writing this article says, American research funding. Oh, no, this was a judge who said this. American research funding is provided by the American taxpayer for the benefit of American society, not as an illicit gift to the Chinese government, said Assistant Attorney General John C. Demers, for the Justice Department's National Security Division. And I just thought that was funny because, you know, it said funding is provided by the American taxpayer for the benefit of American society. And I was thinking, yeah, benefit of the American society, like funding for gain of function of viruses to make viruses more infectious, adhere to respiratory cells stronger, and cause more harm, etc., etc. So, there's just one guy, you know, that was what? Who knows when this guy was caught? Because he pleaded guilty in November, so who knows when these original... I didn't go research when these charges were originally filed. Hang on, drink time. And it's kind of interesting that he was... Oh, in this article, I was going to say it's kind of interesting that he was diverting this money to fund research into rheumatology and immunology for China. And, you know, here's just one guy who has come to this country under the guise of being a professor or whatever and was funneling, you know, like, I mean, like we need the Chinese to come in here and funnel money into China. You know, Fauci seems like he's done just a fine job of doing that. And who knows who else? I mean, who really knows who else? I think it's just a matter of time before we see, you know, more of these kind of stories coming up. But I just thought that was kind of cool. It just came up today. Let me see what else is in the stack here. I have stories that I've been kind of wanting to share for, I guess I keep stories in my queue for about 3 episodes or 4 episodes. I think, yeah, after a month, if I haven't got to it, I ditch them and move on to something else. But, one thing I did kind of want to briefly talk about, I know I've brought it up several times. I've talked about immigration, you know. Actually, it kind of fits in with this whole idea of the assault on our country. You know, and I just think another kind of feeds right into, you know, preparing, you know, just being able to live your life, you know, wherever you are and how to do that. But this is what I was kind of thinking about immigration, and then I'm gonna take this. I mean, this is probably a half hour, but I'm gonna give it the Reader's Digest condensed coverage because it's been on my list for probably about a month. But I was thinking how the U.S. government is kind of participating in slavery still, and I guess it's probably a convoluted way that I could get to that. But this is kind of what I was thinking. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I guess I'm thinking that the federal government thinks that, pretty much everybody coming across the southern border are complete idiots. And this is why I'm saying that. And, you know, the problem is that eventually the truth is going to come out, and these people are going to figure out that they've been lied to all along, or that they've been kind of tricked into becoming slaves. But just think about this. So you have, you know, people from lots of different places in the world coming to the southern border and the northern border and the coasts of the United States, trying to get here because they want a better life. And the federal government is kind of paying them to come here in several different ways. Not only by just passing budgets that promote the processing of human beings from wherever they come into the country, right into our society to go work wherever and do whatever, but also providing social programs for them to participate in. So basically, you know, you're paying them to do that. And here, so these immigrants are coming here thinking that they're coming here for a better life. And I would say, you know, for a long history of the United States, yeah, it probably was a better life coming to the United States. But look at what we're facing now. I mean, so those people are coming here and maybe, yeah, they're probably going to make, I don't know if they're going to make more money or not, because in the long run, when inflation starts kicking in, which it already has, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but even my wife and I have started looking at some things differently. Like if you notice, I'm going to give you an example that I can think of right off the top of my head. I love cashews, and I love to get that big container of cashews from Costco. But here's what's happening. So Costco and other, you know, companies are changing the quantity of food in a container, but charging you the same amount, which is basically inflation because you're getting less product for the same amount of money. So instead of shrinking the container or leaving the same amount in and charging you more, they're putting less product in, like, so the cashews, and I don't know the price because I don't know the price of almost anything. I don't do a lot of shopping, and I don't look at prices. That's just the way I am. So, but I know that cashews now dropped from, I think, 23 ounces in a container to 20 ounces or 21 ounces, and it's the same price. But my point is, so these immigrants are coming, you know, expecting a better life, and basically the economy is getting destroyed. I mean, look, we had the gas shortage. Look at what's happening in Northern California. You know, all of those crops that were going to be grown in Northern California, and so much of the meat, the ranches that are down there, they're not going to be able to water their cattle. They're not going to be able to get the food, you know, hay, alfalfa, grain that they normally feed those critters. That's not going to be grown locally, so they're not going to have the food to feed the animals. So you're not going to have the food, you're not going to have the crops, you're not going to have the meat. That's going to put additional pressure on the food chain, basically. Plus, if you think about it, a lot of those immigrants come across the border to do what? Work in the fields and work on the ranches, you know, kind of help produce food. Yeah, we do get a lot of food from Mexico. Well, hopefully they still have a lot of water down there. You know what else, Moose Girl? Mexico, I think years ago, banned Monsanto products. So actually, I think a lot of food you get from Mexico. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I do remember a certain part of Mexico banned Monsanto GMO products from being grown anywhere near their, like, native corn crops. But what I was saying is, you know, the pressure on the economy is going to be even stronger. The pressure on the food chain is going to be even stronger. And here you have, you're bringing, you know, paying these people to come into the country, you know, or you're providing all these services and promising them a better life while you're absolutely destroying the life that they're coming here for. And if you don't think that there's going to be repercussions down the road when people, they don't pay them much on the farm. But I know, but I guess it's more than what they were getting where they were. But if you don't think those people are going to wake up one day and understand how mistreated they were and how deceived they were coming to the United States, and then go in to get some reparations for that, because that's the standard that has been set, I'm sorry, but you're sadly mistaken. And unfortunately, our federal government is just like blind to history, or they just are too stupid to understand. Anyway, that's going to about do it for this episode of The Redneck Dentist. Thanks, you guys, for checking into the chat room. I look forward to seeing you all during the week and next week. And we are out of here.